You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and a very warm welcome along to William Hill's Racing Podcast for Tuesday, the 2nd of April. Looking ahead to all the action at Brighton, Nottingham and Yarmouth in the afternoon, then in the evening at Wolverhampton, Chelmsford and across the Irish Sea over jumps at Ballinrobe. You can join Darren Owen, Andrew Mount and Sam Turner for full coverage of all the day's action from 1:50 p.m. But for now, my name's John Gibby in the company of Rory DeLaghi to look ahead to the action. Hello Rory, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, John.
Fantastic. Well, as usual on a Tuesday, let's have a look at the Monday jury in the Racing Post. The big questions of the week being asked by the industry paper and seeing if we can get our head around some of the big issues. And it's a slight sense of deja vu, Rory, because
the
last time we were speaking in this room a couple of weeks ago, the first question was very similar to this. And is Churchill a good thing for the 2,000 guineas?
Yes, and then whenever we spoke about it last, talking about all the classics, I think I made the point that it's good to see some of the trials before you start making hard and fast conclusions. And Churchill's reputation goes before him. He was the best of the two-year-olds last year. And we now know roughly what the field is going to be. Only 12 still left in the guineas. So there aren't that many unknowns. The straight answer to the question is no. You know, it's not a good thing because we've been here last season with a horse with very similar credentials who was beaten out of sight in the race. And indeed, the horses who brought the best two-year-old form to the guineas last year filled the last three positions. So you can never judge this race purely on two-year-old form. And it's nice to see horses who've come out and won the trials. And I think those who have won the trials this time around are interesting opposition to Churchill. Albuquerque was a winner in France. Barney Roy, impressive at Newbury, and Eminent similarly when winning the Craven. I'm not absolutely sure Albuquerque will be at home at Newmarket. I know his trainer's confident.
Came out today and said he thinks he's definitely going to finish in the first three.
In fairness, you look at the field and he wouldn't be worried about much behind him in the betting, really. It really is, you know, Churchill, Albuquerque, Barney Roy and Eminent are the four to concentrate on. But I thought both Barney Roy and Eminent put up good enough performances in winning their trials to suggest they're well above average and deserve their place in a race like this. So Churchill, you know, needs to keep coming forward as he was last season to win this. And given we haven't seen him this season, I would say you couldn't possibly call him a good thing. Those at home might feel differently at Ballydoyle, but I think there's enough opposition there. And both Eminent and Barney Roy put up very, very smart performances, particularly in terms of the speed figures they produced at Newmarket and Newbury, respectively. So I think it's more open than the market suggests.
Also, it feels like, to me anyway, there's a slight difference from last year where there weren't really massive contenders who came out of the trials in the same way. Like the Craven was a bit of an odd race last year, and whereas this year you've had Eminent come out and won that race in really good style. Barney Roy was really good as well. Dream Castle at 16-1 in the market, just behind him in that race, but shaping as if he could improve for, you know, another couple of runs.
Yeah, Dream Castle looks one he needs to learn a little bit more. Was a bit free in the race, showed tremendous speed to get to the front and looked to have that race won briefly. But Barney Roy was stronger at the line, and Dream Castle arguably a little bit underestimated by the market. I thought that was a strong race to Greenham. It isn't always, but the front two came a long way clear in the end, in a very good time that suggested they're well above average. So yeah, I think that's decent form. Hopefully we're in for a very, very interesting guineas rather than one that's completely dominated by one.
Should be an interesting 2,000 guineas, of course, takes place this Saturday at Newmarket. And we move along now to the first fillies classic of the season, the 1,000 guineas. And similar sort of question, Rory, who are you fancying in this one?
Rhododendron tops the mark, and she's got the best form from last season. But there are others who... you can give half a well, more than half a chance to. It looks open enough. I thought the one who was overpriced, who had very good form last season and shaped well in her return, was Intricately. Aidan O'Brien's had a lot of the 3-year-old fillies have come out and disappointed this season. He's had two or three winners, but in half decent races he's had a lot of fillies who've been a little disappointing, and I wouldn't be falling over to take 2-1 Rhododendron. Whereas Intricately's had a run this season. She ran that in the 1,000 Guineas trial in which Aidan O'Brien won. But I thought she shaped really well, as if she was being brought along with the run in mind. She wasn't particularly well drawn that day either. She will improve, and she'll be a first classic runner for Joseph O'Brien, first runner in the 1,000 Guineas. I thought at 14-1 she was very interesting indeed, given that she's already shown how tough she is. She's shown she's a grade one filly last year. And at the prices, she appeals more to me than most.
Very positive sounds coming from Roger Charlton about Fair Eva, the way she's progressed over the winter as well.
Yeah, she was. I mean, she looked very good at times last season. She looked especially good on her second start, and she hit the line really hard at Ascot. She was a bit disappointing in the Lowther, but she came back to form on her final start of the season. Strictly speaking, she's got maybe £10 to find with the best of these, but there's something about her physically that suggests we haven't seen the best of her. And as long as she's come on the right way temperamentally, then she could be very interesting indeed. She's been well supported as a result. I think if you put this together based on official ratings, she'd be a little bit further down the list. But she looked on her first couple of starts that she was going to be an absolute superstar. And there's enough about her physically to think that she will actually do better, be more the finished article at 3.
Great. Well, that's the get to the 1,000 Guineas. Intricately, the one that's interesting, Rory, there. The first Fiddies Classic taking place this Sunday. And we move on now to the next question on the Monday jury. And that's just asking very generally, which flat horse has got you excited already this season, if any, Rory?
Yeah, well, it's early enough in the season to be getting excited by them. When you bear in mind that that the best horses tend not to show in their faces, and we haven't seen Churchill yet, for example. But Eminent's pretty exciting. Of all the horses in the Guineas, he's the one who might just be the type to do the Guineas Derby double. He's remarkably relaxed for one with his pedigree. I was very impressed with the way he got the job done in the Craven, and he does give the impression that he will stay a mile and a half. And you look at the Derby field, a lot of them have question marks in that regard, and he could just be very exciting. So if there's one that I've seen so far that has got me excited about things to come, then it's probably him. But I'll wait until we're well into May before getting really excited by the flat performers.
I also thought, well, we were talking about the Greenham form earlier on, but I just wonder again if that's that form of Barney Roy and Dreamcastle could work out very well as the season progresses. I mean, they were clear of the field as we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, there's the winners by Accelebration, the runner-ups by Frankel, and there was a sort of a, you could cast your mind back to Frankel and Accelebration meeting a couple of times at Newbury. To suggest that there's a look, the fact that they're in the same colours means they're maybe less likely to meet than might be the case, but that's not really an issue with Godolphin, and they both looked well above average in what was a very strong contest. If we hadn't got it into our heads that the Greenham isn't always that exciting a trial, then I think we'd be more interested in those horses going forward, and I think you're not far off the truth there.
Well, we'll see how that goes as the season progresses. And we switch codes now to the jumps, of course. Jumps finale taking place just over the weekend, just gone. And looking ahead to next season, who do you think is the biggest threat to sizing John's Gold Cup crown?
I think the biggest threat to any Gold Cup winner retaining his crown is always the horse itself. You know, you've got to keep progressing. He was impressive. He's reminiscent of Best Mate. I've heard a couple of people say that, and I tend to agree with it. But the biggest battle is making sure that Sizing John is in the same form this time next year as he was this time around. To have won the Irish Gold Cup, the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and then gone on to win the Punchestown Gold Cup, no horse has done that before. Very few horses have done the Irish Gold Cup, Cheltenham Gold Cup double, to be perfectly honest. So it's remarkable that he's done that. He's progressing at the right time. But often the Gold Cup isn't just about a horse who's head and shoulders above the others. It's catching a horse who's progressing at the right time and in good form at the right time. So it's not so much that there's one horse who's going to be a big danger to him. There are four or five who've got similar sort of claims at their very best. Konigree obviously came back and there was a tremendous run from him at Punchestown, but whether he can be sound for the next season is a big question mark given his history, but he'd obviously be a threat. We've forgotten Thistlecracker remarkably quickly. We tend to concentrate on what we've seen recently, and so we're bound to talk about Sire St. John. We will talk about the horses who pushed him very close at Punchestown as big rivals, but you know, Thistlecracker was unbeatable a few months ago. And now that he's picked up a small injury, he's been completely forgotten about. Clearly, he has to be. His injury is not serious enough that it would worry you about the ability he retains. But he's got to come into the equation as well. For all I was poo-pooing his chances of winning a Gold Cup at the start of last season because you know he was so short in the betting for a horse who hadn't jumped a fence. But he's proven himself now, and I just with all Gold Cup type talk, I just touch wood and hope we see the best horses take each other on, because you know I'd rather that than one horse was dominant through the season, and we lose too many good horses through the jump season, I'm afraid.
Well, certainly have to learn and mature, but one I absolutely love for the Gold Cup, if he can iron out those quirks, is Mike Bite, who I think is one of the most talented chasers around at the moment. But for him having had a few issues in running for his races,
yes, indeed, he is a massive talent, and he took his field apart in the RSA before going walkabout on the run-in. But that tendency to do that has to be a concern. There was a lot of talk about him meeting York Hill in the King George. King George could be the race of the season next year if all the major contenders turn up. And I'd love to see horses who are brilliant but have that quirk run and given a chance to show what they can do. And if he can straighten out those quirks, then he has to be a major player. I think horses who've proven themselves quirky at the very top level tend not to iron out those quirks. They tend to get more quirky as time goes on. But I'd rather they still show that kind of tendency than they went a little bit dull or they lost interest in the game. That's much more important. So I'd rather have a Mike Bite who was dangerous but on his game than one who was straightened out but a little bit lost a little bit of his brilliance because of it.
Well, if the horses stay sound, then it could be a very exciting season for staying chasers next year. And we'll see if Sizing John can retain his Cheltenham Gold Cup crown. More generally, in terms of the 2017-18 jump season, Rory, who is your best horse to follow at this stage? There's a bit of contention around this race, horses to follow. But
yes.
Who are you looking forward to seeing?
Not so much who I'm looking forward to seeing, but a horse I think can go on to even better things next season is Apple's Jade. I don't know how she figures in the champion hurdle betting, because she's been early last season she was consigned to the champion hurdle dustbin, not quick enough for that, but we've seen now in two seasons she is an absolutely huge force in the spring, and if they campaign her properly, the fact that you stay 2.5 miles is no bar to success in the champion hurdle. She was going into this season as as a 5-year-old mare against the boys, and that's never going to work. Historically, 5-year-olds have always struggled in the champion hurdle, and mares, although they've won a few, it's been a tough one. In her second season outside novice company, I think she'll be a bigger force, and she can actually come all the way through and be a champion hurdle contender, and I hope she's campaigned in that way next year.
And moving on from the horses to the people associated with them for the next jump season, who do you think is going to win the trainers' titles in Britain and Ireland?
Yeah, that's a very easy question to answer, because I really couldn't give a monkey's. And no one else does. It's one of those. I know there's betting on it. And the trainers' championship in Ireland was a really interesting battle this year. But as a rule, it's something that doesn't interest that many people, including trainers, for me. Certainly, I think Paul Nicholls is very determined every year to win the Trainers' Championship. It means an awful lot to him. And Nicky Henderson was saying at the weekend how important it is for the team to be recognised. When you're champion trainer, your whole team is there as well. And it's a vindication for them. But for the general public, no one really remembers who won the Trainers' Championship every year. Remember who won the big races. And the horses are the stars. And I'd rather concentrate on the horses than the trainers.
Just so there's some sort of answer to this question, I think Willie Mullins possibly underrated going into next season. I mean, I know he's got a bit, he's lacking talent in some divisions, particularly 2 mile hurdles and the like, but I think he was a bit unlucky at times this season.
Yeah, absolutely. He lost some of his star performers, and he had the Jigginstein horses taken away at an unfortunate juncture. I think if he had more time to sort his yard out, if he'd known the horses weren't staying with him, say in June, then he could have filled those boxes quicker. Now the story is that the vacancies in his yard were filled almost immediately, but you can't build a team for the championship races in a matter of days. So given time to plan for the future, you think Willie will retain that championship for all it was very close this year. Gordon's still going to go from strength to strength. There's no doubt about that. But with a little bit of time to sort things out in the yard, I think Willie will again win that championship. But it doesn't bother me in the slightest which one of them does. It's seeing which horses they're able to come through to win the big races.
General indifference on the trainers' titles of Rory DeLarghi there. And we move now from the next jump season to a little bit closer in the future to the racing today on Tuesday. And we start with the 3:45 at Nottingham. It's a mile and half a furlong, a Phillies handicap at Class 3. And there's 6 who go to post in this one. Who's catching your eye in this, Rory?
This looks good for La Casa Tarifa for me. I see she's put in at 2-1 on the betting forecast. If you get that kind of price, I think it looks very good value. She's won her last 2 in different conditions, once on the poly track at Chelmsford. And then she really impressed me when winning at Ripon last time out. Ripon, for me, is a track that there tends to be a positional bias at work there, and it's a lot easier if you race handily at that track. Whereas in a race that was slowly run, she raced out the back of the field last time out and did well to win after a slow start. She does want to be getting away on terms here, but it's not really that much of an issue at Nottingham for me. It's easy enough to come on from off the pace at Nottingham. Generally, it's harder to make all the running at that track in recent times. So even if she's a little bit slowly out the stalls, as she has been in a small field, she'll soon be able to pick her place. And she should be too good for these off a mark of 83. I thought it was a generous mark. She lost her way at the end of last season, but she's shown decent form early on, and indeed in nurseries. And she's not at all badly treated off a mark of 83 here based on the ribbon form. So I thought she'd be closer to 5-4 than 2-1, to be honest.
Well, this one, I have to say, I'm quite interested in Lincoln Roxy. It was consistent enough last season. Should handle the conditions here, but what really interests me about her is last season, she finished 2nd on her seasonal reappearance, but that was at 20-1. I think she goes well fresh, and she does have top weight to contend with here, but La Casa Tarifa, probably the worthy favourite, but I think Lincoln Rocks could give her something to think about.
Yeah, there's a couple in here that are capable of winning handicaps off them, Mark. She's not too high on the weights, Lincoln Rocks, although she was only 5th of 12 off this mark on her final start last season. But as you said, came to hand early last year, and she's only a 4-year-old, so she should be able to improve again. She'll find races, no doubt. She's liable to make the running here. But I don't think it's the easiest track in the world to make all the running, Nottingham. Perhaps if she's able to dominate dictate the pace in a small field, that will help her chances.
Well, we move on now to the 4:30 at Yarmouth over 7 furlongs. 9 go to post for this handicap, Rory. Looking like a competitive field, especially if we look at the betting forecast.
Yes, this is a very difficult race to unpick. You can give a chance to the vast majority of the field on bits and pieces of form. They're not all the easiest to win with. There's a lot of talent in there, but a lot of horses who tend to flatter to deceive, if you like. And I'm going to take a chance on one at a big price here. Majestic Moon for Julia Fielden. A couple of things I like about this. The horse has dropped in the weights. Won a half decent race at Ascot a couple of seasons. I say half decent, a very good handicap at Ascot from the front. Is the by far the likeliest front runner here. Has dropped to a workable mark, hinted at a revival last time out, and has the benefit of Finlay Marsh. And I think Finlay Marsh's £7 claim is hugely important. He's a talented rider. And this is a reasonably straightforward ride, Majestic Moon. If he's in form, then he's capable of a very bold bid from the front. And the fact that Finlay takes 7 off his back, he will not be any nuisance to the horse, that's for sure. it is a little bit of a punt in the dark because he's not. He doesn't seem to be the force of old, but he's beginning to get a little bit of purchase now in terms of his handicap mark, and I can see him springing a minor shock.
Majestic Moon at a likely big price for Rory in the 4:30 at Yarmouth. We move now to the all-weather evening action at Chelmsford. Not a bad card on the all-weather at Chelmsford.
Chelmsford, they put on decent prize money and they get half-decent races. Not a huge number of runners there, but a bit of quality on show. And the 7:40 is it's a tough race, mainly because it's quite difficult to be certain who's going to lead. A few of these can go forward. Pactolus led last time out. Noble Gift often leads. But I'm going to take a chance that, given that Noble Gift on his reappearance was held up, that might just have been a one-off. But if they're going to take that view with Noble Gift again, then I think Ikki Masho is the likeliest leader here. Jonathan Portman's runner, and Ikki Masho made all the running to beat Pactolus two starts ago. And if again being given an easy-ish lead in a small field, I think despite the higher mark, I think Ikki Masho might be able to make all again. These are ideal conditions. The tricky thing is working out whether the others are going to allow Ikki Masho to dominate. Pactolus doesn't normally lead. He did last time out. Normally sits just off the pace, and I can see him reverting to those tactics. He's very consistent for Stuart Williams. He just struggles to get his head in front a little bit. If Noble Gift goes on, then that throws the race into a completely different light. But I will take a chance that Ikki Masho is the likeliest leader and will be given a canny ride from the front by Richard Kingscote. He doesn't want to go too hard in front. He wants to dictate a reasonably modest pace and just try to stack them up behind. And Ikki Masho is capable of holding them off from the front if that's the case.
Ikki Masho, course and distance winner there for Rory in the 7:40 at Chelmsford. And finally, the next race on that Chelmsford card, the 8:10. Seven go to field in this for a 5-furlong handicap for 4-year-olds plus. And, well, again, it's a competitive heat, Rory.
Yeah, absolutely. Much the same as the previous race. You can give chances to most of the field. And you got one or two who are very well handicapped on old form. Again, I will stick to one who's been running well recently, is high enough in the weights but should get things run to suit, and that's Zach Brown for Charlie Wallace. Joshua Bryan gets a decent tune out of Zach Brown. Again, he claims 7, which is useful here because he's high enough in the weights off a mark of 95. I think that's a tough enough mark, but with Joshua Bryan's £7 claim and a fair possibility of nicking the early lead, then I think you're guaranteed a run from Zach Brown. Latham's interesting on the pick of his form. Super sprint winner a couple of seasons ago, but I thought a little bit disappointing on return. Was made favourite the other day and didn't show enough for me. Maybe just needed the run, but given it was well supported, that's a little bit off-putting for me. So Zach Brown, I'm hoping, is going to represent a little bit of value. Probably going to be third or fourth favourite there, but as I said, Joshua Bryan's £7 claim could be all the difference here.
Zach Brown in the 8:10 at Chelmsford for Rory then. And well, that's it for this Tuesday racing podcast from William Hill. Remember, you can tune into all the action on Racing Radio from 1:50 p.m. tomorrow. Rory, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
And best of luck to you, and best of luck to all you too.
ACCA 5 is William Hill's new ACCA insurance. It means if you have a 5 selection accumulator and one lets you down, you'll get your money back as a free bet. And it's available across all sports. ACCA 5, exclusive to William Hill. T's and C's apply.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.